This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
It won't be!
And on that haunting note, hello everybody, you are listening today to Popcorn Culture, which is of course your kind of weekly-ish dose of movies and pop culture madness. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, of course, Sharmila Ganesan, Arvind Yuvaraj. And we're talking about...
What? I don't know. What movie?
Alien.
We are talking about the movie that I went to watch 11 times in the cinema when I was a kid.
Wow.
And I was one of those people, the ones who made it to the news.
Is that your highest?
Yes, I think in the cinema, yes.
In the cinema, okay.
Yes, and so we're talking about Titanic. We're talking about the movie that just kind of... really started this whole idea of modern epics, right? And then, of course, nothing else has kind of topped it. But yeah, Jack and Rose, that's what we're talking about today.
I mean, as far as throwbacks go, I think I was really excited when you guys were okay with picking the Titanic as the Throwback Tuesday episode because nobody wants to talk about it unironically anymore. And I feel like the movie deserves the unabashed, like, joyful, painful...
And love.
And I mean, because it's a beautiful film. I rewatched it just yesterday, and I'm amazed at how well it stands the test of time. So I last must have watched it maybe, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it still sparkles, honestly.
I think, and what I think a lot of people don't realize, that the movie's 23 years old this year. Like, it's been 23 years since that movie came out, 1997. And for me, that movie was my introduction to, like, a world of cinema outside my standard superheroes and dinosaurs and sci-fi and all the kooky, goofy, cartoonish stuff that I used to watch. Watching Titanic in the cinema sort of told me that I could watch something more historical, something deeper, something that, you know, that didn't involve... people killing other people on purpose with superpowers.
An iceberg killing a lot of people.
A lot of people. So that was my gateway movie into like a whole other segment of cinema that I didn't realize was okay for me to watch before that.
I've been thinking about this in the context of our Star Wars discussions where we talked about how Star Wars is all about big feelings. And then last week, I think it was, we talked about memeability and how, you know, that goes a long way towards movies lasting. And Titanic, I think, to your point, Sharmila, has unnecessarily crossed over into memeability before its time. Meaning, now everybody remembers the cheese la, fundamentally, right?
Yeah. The arms spread out over the bow of the boat.
The king of the world.
The paint me like a French girl.
You know, and we have, we run through those rote moments, right? And it's a lot more than that, I think. So I also rewatched the film, and I was surprised to see how much of the movie, not that I had forgotten, but that I hadn't thought about for a very long time, because my feelings about the movie were encapsulated in 90s Leonardo DiCaprio.
And the
also,
hairstyle.
And the hair, man.
Yeah.
But then also all these other things, right? All the cheesy, top cheese meme moments that meant that I didn't think about Titanic beyond that. But like, so rewatching it as an adult and being a lot less invested in the romance, because I'm like, I know how this goes. I found myself really, really moved by what happens on the ship. While as a teenager, I was really wrapped up in the tragedy of Jack and Rose, as an adult now, I'm watching and I'm like, oh, that is a lot of people to not have enough lifeboats for. And to register that was a historical fact, and, you know, to think about how it must have felt to not know, you know, I just, that lingered with me a surprising amount.
So I think Cameron actually does something really genius with this film, which is that he doesn't ignore those moments and those facts. You know, whether it's making sure the engineer is talking about how we only have enough lifeboats for half the people, or at the end when there's the narration of Rose saying, of all the lifeboats, only one came back.
The six people who survived.
You know, when the camera sort of swoops out from the ship sailing to the room underneath, and then you see the pistons and the engines. He understands that to tell the story is not to ignore the small moments, and that 3 hours plus is not wasted. Like, I know people keep talking about how long a movie it is, but rewatching it, I didn't feel that a single second was wasted. Every scene is really tightly woven into
potent.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think the movie works, you know, in so many layers. Like, you can watch it as a love story, and if you just want to watch it on like a surface level for Jack and Rose, then it's a Jack and Rose story, then it becomes a tragedy. If you want to watch it as like social commentary about like a class system, mm-hmm, and how that has changed, then it could be that. If you want to watch it for all sorts of like progressive reasons, then that movie has like it's like stock full of those themes and those stories that is out there. I think it depends on how you dissect Titanic. Like, there's so many ways to do it. For me, my appreciation for the movie became like sort of was renewed like maybe 10 years after I saw it, when I saw like behind the scenes footage and I watched like documentaries of how James Cameron made Titanic, and I didn't realize like how much of that movie is CGI. Like, I thought it was all practical. For some reason, I don't know why, I thought he built a ship, but I thought that they built big portions of that ship, and it wasn't there. Like, everything shot on like blue screen, and for that time to have such good CGI and so much new computer effects and stuff that was adopted by Hollywood was a big deal. And for someone who appreciates so much of what goes into like the production and these big blockbuster films, I think a lot of people don't know just how much James Cameron put into Titanic, mm-hmm, and how much from like a production standpoint that movie changed Hollywood forever.
Also, CGI that stands up really well. I was watching it's seamless. It could have been made today. That's how good it still looks on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on that note about could have been made today and progressiveness, right?
Yeah.
I think that we are, well, we're in 2020, but cancel culture isn't over. If anything, I don't know if it's picking up steam, but it definitely exists. And so I have to admit, I felt a bit of trepidation going back to watching a movie in the late 90s that was a love story and that had just all these overtones. I admit, I was worried. I was like, oh God, am I going to go back and suddenly find out that this is a really deeply problematic film? And instead, what happened was the complete opposite.
Yeah.
You guys, Titanic is so woke.
It really is.
So woke.
I repeatedly found myself going like, oh my God, Rose is such an empowering female character. Mm-hmm. She's a teenage girl who grabs an axe and saves the guy that she's in love with. There's no damsel in distress. They continuously save each other.
Yeah.
And I think that in itself is really, really important. And for a movie made in the 90s and a love story at that, very progressive.
Also, Rose goes from being somebody who at the start couldn't see a way to continue living and who at the end only wanted to survive. And I thought that that was a beautiful arc, you know, because mm-hmm, you first really meet her feeling her feelings at the prow of the boat, right? Like the famous moment, which she later invokes going, this is where we met. And I'm like, girl, there are more important things at this point. But, you know, it, from that to being the girl who blows the whistle and says, come back.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's a lot there in the character of Rose DeWitt
Bukater. Rose Dawson, though.
Later. Rose Dawson by the end.
That's what she says. But there's also a lot of cheesiness from the point of, you know, having a villain. Mm-hmm. Like, Billy Zane plays a villain that is a mustache-twirling villain.
Yes. I love him.
I love him so much, but he doesn't have a mustache. That's the thing. Even him, like, from a villain standpoint, he's progressive for a villain in a way that he doesn't show, like, his brute strength, or he doesn't, like, outwardly behave like one. But he's not so tactical, but he's like a villain under the surface, like under the skin. So he's nice on the top.
He's an iceberg of a villain.
He is the iceberg on the ship. So if you want to watch something where there are bad guys, there are villains, there's an evil butler, I think he shows up somewhere in the movie. And you can consume Titanic for all those things, and it's done so well. But if you want to like shove all that stuff aside, there's deeper stuff in the movie that you can explore on like multiple watches, I think.
I love Billy Zane's Cal Hartley. I love him.
Like, Cal Hockley?
Is it Hockley? I thought it was Hartley, but...
It's something Lee.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It might as well just be villain.
Cal villain. Yeah.
No, because honestly, like, I hated him so much when I was a teenager, and rewatching it, I still hate him. I mean, at the end, he's literally bashing off other survivors with an oar. Yep.
He pretends a child is his child so he can get on a lifeboat.
Correct.
Come on.
But at the same time, he can't bear to lose the woman that he thinks he loves. I don't know if he loves her. But he certainly can't bear to lose anything. You know, he pursues her around. He is the epitome of sort of a toxic partner.
Like a control freak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's a control freak.
And there's this really poignant line, which I don't remember what noticing the first time. Gloria Stewart, old Rose, says, he lost everything in the crash, and I heard he put a bullet in his mouth. And I realized that he is that classic toxic masculinity come to its almost natural end, isn't it?
In 1997. Well, I mean, in 1912, but in 1997. So, yeah, I mean, we are talking today about Titanic, unabashedly visiting this classic film. How many times did you watch it in the cinema? Is it something that you've enjoyed? Do you want to talk about it with us? Please do. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and, of course, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my if you have something longer that you want to say. We're going to be back after this. You are listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
We never found anything on Jack. There's no record of him at all.
No, there wouldn't be, would there? And I've never spoken of him until now. Not to anyone. Not even your grandfather. A woman's heart is a deep ocean of secrets. But now you know there was a man named Jack Dawson, and that he saved me in every way that a person can be saved. I don't even have a picture of him. He exists now only in my memory.
And welcome back to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila. Today we are talking about Titanic. You just heard the old Rose and telling, I suppose, the culmination, right, of her tale. So we've been talking about the movie as a whole and what we liked and didn't like about it. I think we should talk a little bit about the script because there are some iconic lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you jump, I jump.
You jump, I jump. Yeah. There's King of the World. There's...
So they're not necessarily great lines.
No, they're not. No. They're like super cheesy.
But don't you think that precisely lines only become iconic and viral and memorable when they're not overly complicated?
Yeah, I mean, you have to be like super accessible and for people to pick it up easily. And even then, people mess up lines. Like going back to Star Wars, like Vader's, like, I am your father, has been messed up so much that people think it's something else. And even from this movie, Draw Me Like One of Your French Girls is one of it that has been parodied and memed so many times. There's, I think the one where she's flying and she's at the tip of the boat, that's another one. But also, like, from a script perspective, like, just the pacing of the movie, like how much he was able to fit into what, about 2.5 hours? It's not that long. The movie is not like 3 hours.
It's nearly three hours.
Yeah. But the amount of story and the amount of arc, the amount of character building, and even world building, like how he shows you the size of the ship internally and how many layers it has and how life is on different decks, all that packed into like 3 hours plus flashbacks where they keep going back to old Rose is just like, from a writing perspective, it's amazing.
So I'd like to call attention, I think, to the fact that a lot of this was made possible by the fact that he just found these stellar leads. Right? Mm. You have the introduction of the Leo and Kate phenomenon. And really, I think without those two people, because you really need to connect to them as a couple and you need to understand who they are with the minimal amount of backstory that we're given with them.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone else could have delivered that story, that performance, the way the both of them did.
You have to believe that they are a couple that existed within 3 days, because it is something like 3 days. That's their entire love story. And you have to believe that these two people would have done all the things that they did. I mean, she got off a lifeboat for him, right? He pushed her onto a lifeboat knowing that he was certainly going to his death. He the door. I'm just saying the door. You know, so you have to believe all these things about their love story. Mm-hmm. It helps also that I think at the time, Leonardo DiCaprio had a really good stock and trade in terms of playing these lovelorn teenagers.
From Romeo and Juliet.
Correct, yeah. So that really helped. Although I think, you know, we should talk about something that I think Sharmila brought up like off mic, which is whether or not this movie would have been made today. And I think that that's a really interesting question because we are right in the midst of, dramatic movies no longer have the pull that they once did in the cinema. They are no longer regarded as movies that you have to like buy a ticket for, right? Yeah. You just wait till they come home to you. And then the other thing is also, just the length of it, the non-franchiseness of it, you know, it was just a standalone piece. And I don't know.
I genuinely feel that a movie like The Titanic would not be made today. Even back then, it was a troubled production. You know, they had put in the money, but they went over budget. They thought it wasn't going to get made, that they'd pull the plug. And then finally it came out and nobody's going to go watch this movie about a movie that they know everyone's already going to die. Mm-hmm. And then it was the highest rated, highest earning movie until 2010 when Avatar came out.
Yes.
But I think today no one's going to take that risk. The script of two teenagers falling in love aboard a ship that's going to sink, basically half a romance and half a disaster movie, I don't think anyone would fund it. There are no superheroes in it.
Unless you gimmick it. Like, so last week we reviewed 1917, and that's sort of like in the same bracket of like historical stuff that has happened. But that movie had a gimmick, so it has like the long take. And you know, people go to that movie wanting to see the long take. I don't think they would have given James Cameron that much of a budget for practical effects. I don't think they would have allowed him to build a set that big. I think whichever studio he went to, which is, you know, it would have been 20th Century Fox, which is owned by Disney. Disney would have told him to just do it with CGI. You know, why do you need to build these sets when you can do everything against a green screen? So the movie wouldn't have come out looking like it does. Like, it won't have that graininess, that coziness, that warmth, that sort of tangible, tactile feeling to the
lighting is quite interesting in the movie. You get to see the progression of daylight. I thought that that was very interesting because it is a story told only over a very short period of days. So you do actually, I didn't realize this when I was younger, but looking at it now, you do actually need to know when the sun rises and sets. It actually matters, you know, how many dinners they had, you know, how often, how many days they spent on the boat.
And that idea of the tactility, I noticed it this time actually in the costumes, especially Rose's dresses, her mother's, and versus what the steerage class passengers wear. It's a period piece on top of being a romance, on top of being a disaster movie. It has that Sense and Sensibility quality where you look at the costumes and you feel like, oh, you know, I know who these people are and where they live and what their world must be like.
Yeah. Also, the movie did so well because of Celine Dion. One of the big reasons that got people into the cinemas, it was the soundtrack, was the song. I don't know if they would have allowed a song like that to go like today, unless it was on the scale of maybe Frozen and Let It Go. It doesn't happen often. Like big songs for movies, they don't do soundtracks on that level anymore. So I don't think, you know, from that perspective, like just a marketing perspective, I don't know if they would have allowed like a big ballad, cheesy song to come out just to push a movie forward.
So a lot about this movie is not cool. So I'm thinking about that idea of the soundtrack, right? And now what you'd look for is a quote-unquote, and I'm using the word advisedly, a quote-unquote cool artist. You know, I'm thinking here of someone like Kendrick for Black Panther. You would do it along those lines. That's how you would commission that soundtrack. You wouldn't take somebody, say, like Celine Dion, who's cool now but wasn't in 97, you know, to do this. And I think that that's like an important part of it. The movie is really earnest. You know, Titanic is very, very earnest. It's not saying it's about anything else, like all the stuff that we're reading into it. It's there because it's in the story. But I don't think it's there because James Cameron wanted to make a movie about class. You know, it just so happens that this is the story that he was telling. So when I think about the intersection of all the things Titanic is, disaster movie, teenage romance, period piece, drama, crazy technical achievement, I think of all the things that crazy technical achievement would still be funded, would still be in the cinema. Disaster movie, we still get those. They're more ludicrous than ever. You know, like big time pieces, sure. But romance no. and drama. I think those are the two that have really gone out of our cinemas. Like, we don't get them on screens anymore, and they're not appointment. What's the word I'm looking for?
Event cinema.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what it is. But Titanic really was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even you know, what you said about drama is kind of like, a lot of people don't want to watch heavy drama in the cinemas anymore. It's become escapism. Like, you go to the cinema to get a box of popcorn and eat and escape and go home and not think about movies too much. And you don't have to think about Titanic that much. But it plays at points. It plays more like a documentary than it does like a big blockbuster event at the movies. It's very, like you said, it's earnest. It's humble. A lot of scenes just look like some scene shot in a ship. Like, there's nothing glamorous about it. So no, I don't think they would have allowed it to be shot in that way today. It would have been super stylized and it would have been hype. They would have wasted a lot of money on marketing, but not in the way that it was done in 97.
But also think about who the repeat audience was. I mean, Lynn watched it 11 times and it's not even a joke. I was 14 when it came out, and there's documented evidence. There's plenty of evidence that a lot of the movie's business, especially in the initial few weeks, were teenage girls. The movie was not made for teenage girls, but it was the teenage girls who brought in that first sort of, I'm going to watch Leo, you know, declare his love 25 times because it resonates with me and I'm going to cry every time.
Yeah.
I don't think people make movies for that demographic necessarily anymore. I don't know whether they were going to cinemas.
They do, but they're romantic comedies. They're high school movies for that branch, right? They don't make them... They don't make these unexpected films that suddenly go, oh, teenage girls like it. Interesting.
Oh, it's based on a young adult novel.
Sure,
It's one of those things. Do you guys have specific memories associated with Titanic? Not specifically of the movie, but stuff that happened around it?
Oh, just, again, I was 14. So I was full in the midst of, like, Leo's the love of my life.
The frenzy. Correct.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I had posters up and everything.
Yeah, so for me, it was mostly just that, like, trying to convince the adults in my life. But then, like, with my dad, it was fairly easy because for him, the whole, like, it being, you know, the Titanic and historical, he would easily go watch it. But no, for me, it was mostly that, like, oh, my God, Leo and the song, you're right.
Yep, yep.
Totally with wanting to be proxy Kate on screen. That's what I remember.
It's exactly that. I just loved Leonardo DiCaprio. I was a teenage girl, which is why I'm so grateful now as a woman in my early 30s to go back and watch it and have it be such a rewarding watch. I really just want to say, like, if you have not seen Titanic in a while, it is worth going back to.
I completely agree.
Yeah. I think that it gets overlooked again because it's such a long film that you think, like, you know, in terms of a rewatch, this isn't it. But take it from us at Throwback Tuesday on Popcorn Culture. Titanic, really rewarding. Let us know if you have plans to watch Titanic anytime soon. Let us know how you remember it from 1997. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, write to us at movies@bfm.my. And if you're keen on updates and knowing what we have coming up, you can follow us. We are at BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.